From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A slew of anti-DEI bills marches through the Florida legislative process as opponents rail but have no power to derail.
We act as if we are kings and queens telling them what to do and telling them, here, you do what we say do.
Also this week, more protections against social media could be on the way for Florida kids.
Constitutional Law 101, the court can only act on behalf of people who are injured.
We'll also get an update on Florida's property insurance debate and see how the state's local law enforcers are handling White House orders to get on the front lines of immigration. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end of week wrap up of top stories from Tallahassee.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com.
Florida lawmakers are pursuing a host of bills this session to block DEI, or Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion programs. Tristan Wood reports several proposals could dismantle diversity efforts in local governments and state agencies.
One of the anti-DEI bills would ban local governments from adopting ordinances, programs, or spending money to promote preferential or differential treatment. Bill sponsor Jacksonville Republican Senator Clay Yarborough says that includes funding for Black History Month or Pride celebrations.
And so it doesn't prevent any of those celebrations from taking place. If they do take place and it is only in the vein of one or more of those descriptors that are in the bill, it cannot receive public funds. But it could still take place in the community even if it wasn't paid for by a local government if there was a question.
Miami Democratic Senator Chevron Jones says he thinks the legislation is an overreach from the state government.
This is us having food fights with what counties and cities are doing that we don't agree with, and we come to Tallahassee and we act as if we are kings and queens telling them what to do and telling them, here, you do what we say do. And if you don't, the governor gonna remove you. It's not democracy. We know what that is. It's authoritarianism.
Hollywood Democratic Senator Jason Pizzo worries the bill would keep local governments from operating grant programs for minority or woman-owned businesses. He says that's hypocritical. In the same year, the Senate wants to support rural communities through its Rural Renaissance package.
We bend over backwards to accommodate, set aside, make provisions for handouts to fiscally constrained or economically underserved communities. They just happen to be predominantly white. And now we want to target those that are not.
Former Senate President Kathleen Passidomo, a Naples Republican, supported the bill in committee. She says changes need to come. She has concerns about how part of the bill that talks about preferential versus deferential language could be interpreted.
If we provide differential treatment to a person based on sex, that could create a problem with a program that was intended for abused women, which nobody would want to get rid of. And so I think we need some work there, because the differential versus preferential is challenging.
Meanwhile, lawmakers are also talking about a bill that would block state agencies from creating DEI offices or hiring private contractors that have DEI practices. Dozens of people spoke against the bill during its first committee stop. One of the critics was Travis Duncan.
My belief has always been government should always be a representation of the people, and looking at the people behind you, it is a diverse community. This bill seeks to remove their capacity for representation in not only like government fields, but also the private sector as well.
Republicans on the committee, like Melbourne Senator Randy Fine, thought many of those who spoke were misrepresenting what DEI is and what the bill does.
I mean, what the bill says is that you won't, you know, manipulate or influence the composition of employees using things like race, sex, or color, or ethnicity. Basically, you can't discriminate. It says that you won't do differential treatment or provide special benefits to a person based on their race, color, or ethnicity. Again, special treatment, not who's the most qualified, but starting looking at people based on who they are. And unfortunately, what we've seen in this country is that DEI is not about diversity.
Other DEI-related measures proposed this session would remove requirements to consider minority-owned businesses for state, local, and university contracts, as well as prohibiting government employers and employees from being required to use someone's preferred pronouns. I'm Tristan Wood.
Should minors have social media in Florida? Well, it's an idea the state legislature opposes and is in federal court proving why it should be banned for most kids. Meanwhile, in the Florida House, a new bill's gaining support to give parents more control over their kids' social media, specifically their messages. Adrian Andrews has more.
Florida lawmakers are extending last year's protections for kids online. A measure moving forward this year would block 14, 15, and 16-year-olds from using programs that cause social media messages to vanish and would require them to give their parents access to their messages. Escambia's Republican representative Michelle Zalsman is the bill's sponsor.
My reason for doing this bill is to protect kids in cases of trafficking or other instances where they're being groomed on social media.
Zalsman's bill requires social media companies to disable features on teens' accounts that delete messages after viewing them. The goal is for parents to always have access, and in certain cases, law enforcement, if a criminal investigation requires it. The measure builds on last year's law that prohibits children under the age of 14 from having social media accounts with so-called addictive features and requires 14, 15, and 16-year-olds to get parental permission. It was a priority of former House Speaker Paul Renner during last year's legislative session.
We need to let kids be kids. We need to let them grow in a place that's safe and that they're well-educated and protected from all the people out there that have other ideas for them or that want to, you know, shape them in a way that is not age appropriate.
The state's social media ban was supposed to go into effect this past January, but it's been delayed by several legal challenges. Recently, a federal judge denied a request filed by tech companies to temporarily block Florida from enforcing the law. WFSU asked social media attorney Timothy Shields to explain the court's decision and how it impacts Florida's ban going forward.
None of those companies said we would be harmed by this law. Constitutional Law 101, the court can only act on behalf of people who are injured. So if the law doesn't affect you, there's no injury, and basically the injunction never makes it through the front door.
Shields, who practices out of Fort Lauderdale, says the tech companies arguing against Florida would have a tough time winning in court because the law only speaks to online platforms with features like infinite scrolling and has a certain percentage of its users younger than 16. If those conditions aren't met, Shields says companies can't sue for damages other than possible First Amendment violations, which is a separate case. He says it puts the companies in a difficult position.
One of those companies would have to come forward and say, we have these addictive features, and maybe no one wanted to get to be labeled. No one wanted to volunteer, that label. And that's why they didn't meet that threshold.
Shields says the latest court ruling means Florida can start enforcing its current social media ban. It's unclear when the state plans to do that. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Coming up on Capitol Report, as some lawmakers urge tighter regulation of insurance companies, the industry is pushing back, saying that hostility is misplaced.
Then why don't we have hundreds of companies in this marketplace, which we don't?
Federal and state orders for local law officers to go into the immigration enforcement business are not universally applauded.
It breaks the trust between our residents, it diverts our resources and our taxpayer dollars, and it harms our neighbors, our friends, and our community.
And we get Florida reaction on President Trump's dismantling of the U.S. Department of Education.
Not only do we need what the federal government gives us or has been giving us in the past, I hope the state will step up as well.
For many years, actually decades, property insurance has been a huge issue in Florida. Although Chuck Nice, professor of risk management at the Florida State University College of Business, says things got really dicey just a few years ago in 2022.
Yes, we had a real crisis in property insurance.
He says there were a bunch of reasons. The increasing severity of storms, more and more coastal development, policyholders suing companies over denied claims. So that year, Florida lawmakers passed some legislation to help the industry catch its breath. But at the same time, the State Office of Insurance Regulation, OIR, hired a Connecticut firm to do a financial overview of the Florida insurance industry. That draft report finally came to light through an investigation by the Tampa Bay Times as this year's session began. It seems to show, while Florida-based insurance companies claimed to teeter on the brink of insolvency in 2022, they were shipping billions of dollars to out-of-state affiliates and shareholders. That certainly got the attention of Florida House Speaker Daniel Perez. Here's what he said on the first day of session.
I have asked the Insurance and Banking Subcommittee to conduct hearings, and they will have access to the full range of tools, including issuing subpoenas, putting witnesses under oath, and hiring outside experts.
Lisa Miller is a former Florida Deputy Insurance Commissioner who now advocates for the industry. She says she has some questions about the numbers contained in that report.
One of the data points in this report talks about $14 billion going to investors. And to that I say this, we have about 8 million homeowners insurance policy in our state, and only about 40 to 50 companies write those policies. If that kind of outflow of dollars, billions of dollars, as all the headlines have said, is true, then why don't we have hundreds of companies in this marketplace, which we don't?
The report also alleged the transfer of lots of money from local insurers to something called managing general agents, or MGAs. And FSU's Chuck Nice says there's nothing intrinsically wrong with that.
Where the ownership can form an insurance company and they can form a managing general agent on the side. And what they can do is the insurance company hires the managing general agent to perform a variety of functions for them. This is a well-established kind of structure in the industry. Many companies use MGAs.
The problem, he says, is when companies take advantage of that arrangement to make it seem like the local company is in much worse financial shape than it really is. But the industry's Lisa Miller also notes the draft report's numbers are nearly 3 years old and that much has changed in the Florida insurance market since then, especially since the legislature changed the laws.
For us to know our actual cost to run our household, it can change every week based on the price of milk. So we're hoping that we can work with the commissioner on providing what costs are, expenses are, based on the market conditions.
Beyond that, FSU insurance expert Chuck Nice believes there are some tweaks that need to be made when it comes to industry oversight without scrapping current law.
I would like to see market stabilization. I don't like to see the legislation changing every year. You can't keep changing the rules. It's one of the reasons why some of the larger companies have shied away from Florida.
Nice says that matters, since one thing nearly everyone agrees on is more private insurance companies in Florida means a healthier, more affordable insurance market for everyone. local law enforcement agencies around Florida are partnering with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. The deals are designed to bolster the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigration. The agreements at the local level could come at a high cost, trust in police, as we hear from our partners at WLRN.
I'm Wilkin Brutus.
And I'm Danny Rivero. When it comes to local police partnering with federal immigration enforcement, Florida is in a league of its own. The majority of all agreements to let local or state officials enforce immigration law are from the Sunshine State.
State leaders say this means Florida is leading the charge when it comes to helping the Trump administration's agenda of mass deportations. Here's Governor Ron DeSantis speaking at a press conference at the Homestead Air Force Base in late February.
President Trump promised to conduct the largest deportation operation in American history. The fact is, if the state and locals are not fully participating in those efforts, it's going to be very difficult to achieve that.
But many worry that the closer local officials get to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, the higher the cost in the community.
Juegos de deportes con ellos, pero ahora ya da miedo.
I spoke to an indigenous Guatemalan man in Lake Worth Beach. He asked us not to use his name. He said last year the community had a great relationship with the sheriff's office. Sports events and other cultural activities typically had the support of sheriff's deputies. But that's no longer happening because of fear from immigrants.
Aunque uno esté bajo un programa.
He won his asylum case last year, and he is here legally. But he says all sorts of people in the community are now suspicious of the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, including himself. In late February, there was an ICE raid conducted in Lake Worth Beach. At least a dozen people reportedly rounded up. Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw told WLRN the office was not involved with the operation. PBSO recently came to an agreement with ICE that allows them to check people's papers and help federal deportation efforts. But he says his deputies haven't been trained yet, so it's not in effect. He said ICE agents are mainly looking for people with criminal histories, but that they might do, quote, collateral arrests in the process.
Most of the arrests from within our community are folks who don't have criminal records. And so when you talk about collateral, our entire community has become collateral damage if they're trying to capture, you know, a dozen, two dozen folks who have criminal records.
Mari Blanco is the assistant executive director of the Guatemalan Maya Center in Lake Worth Beach, a nonprofit serving immigrant populations.
Certainly, PBSO has been working towards creating a relationship with the community for years to be able to properly identify crimes and do, you know, their policing. This is going to harm their relationship. It takes years to build that trust and seconds to destroy it.
Lake Worth Beach Commissioner Christopher McVoy is advocating for a series of town hall meetings about immigration policy to help maintain trust in community policing as the crackdowns intensify.
The community starts losing confidence in law enforcement if they're not sure where law enforcement falls on all this ICE enforcement. We need law enforcement in our city. It's a big deal.
This debate is playing out all over South Florida. In Coral Gables, the city police entered into an agreement with ICE without any public input. Alana Greer is an attorney with the Community Justice Project, and she spoke out at a press conference in front of the police station.
City police should have no role in civil immigration enforcement. It breaks the trust between our residents, it diverts our resources and our taxpayer dollars, and it harms our neighbors, our friends, and our community.
In a city council meeting, Hialeah Mayor Esteban Bovo addressed criticism that his city's deal with ICE could mean less community trust.
Many might want to go and put fear-mongering out there so everybody gets nervous, okay? But tomorrow morning, it'll be business as usual in the city of Hialeah.
Florida was actually the first state to adopt a program that let local and state police interrogate and detain people suspected of being in the U.S. unlawfully. Back in 2002, under Governor Jeb Bush, Articoli is the executive director of the Asian Law Caucus, a civil rights nonprofit. As a scholar at the University of California, Berkeley, a lot of her work followed how the federal government responded to the terrorist attacks on 9/11. by partnering with local police to do immigration enforcement.
You know, witnesses wouldn't come forward or victims of crime wouldn't come forward. It really eroded trust in local communities, and it increased racial profiling. The bulk of it is trying to instill fear.
These programs were ended by the Obama administration after major racial profiling scandals in Arizona. But as they're reenacted by the Trump administration, Florida is once again at the forefront. David Harris is a professor of law at the University of Pittsburgh, and he also sees a parallel with the current moment and the years that followed the terrorist attack on 9/11. Harris testified before Congress in 2004 about using local police to help immigration enforcement. And he says leaders were surprised at what police had to say about it at the time.
I went in there to testify, and I had with me 11 pages of quotations from police chiefs, police union leaders, sheriffs, all kinds of people just saying, no, bad idea, not good for our community's safety. And that's our priority. I had testified in Congress before on other issues. I did not go in with 11 pages or any pages of law enforcement endorsements.
But now Harris admits things have changed, at least in Florida. Most surprisingly to him, over 24 cities like Tampa, St. Petersburg, Key West, Davie, and Naples have joined new agreements to help ICE. That didn't happen even after 9/11.
Obviously, the political climate has changed and the social climate has changed some. There may be more city police departments who are willing to go along with this, willing to be part of it, or perhaps their constituents in these cities really want it. The cities that do this, if they have any immigrant population at all, and if, as is typical, the households are mixed as to status, they will pay a price for this that they may not want to recognize. This is not something that can be wished away. It will happen.
One thing is for sure. City police departments don't want to talk about it. I called over a dozen agencies to talk to the sheriff or chiefs of police for this story, and none agreed to an interview. I'm Danny Rivero in Miami.
I'm Wilkin Brutus in Palm Beach County.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, for years, President Trump has talked about his desire to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education. On Thursday of this week, he issued an executive order to move that process forward. And in Florida, reactions range from enthusiasm to anxiety. We get more from Margie Menzel.
Abolishing the U.S. Department of Education would require an act of Congress. But in his order, the president directs the agency to make a plan to shutter it. For Leon School Superintendent Rocky Hanna, it's a step into the unknown.
For school districts, not only in the state of Florida, but across the country, there's a lot of anxiety right now because around $3 million a month of our payroll expenses are funded by federal programs.
He's talking about Title I, Title II, Title III, Title IV, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, funding for low-income students, staff development, English as a second language, and student loans.
If they simply eliminate the Federal Department of Education and bureaucracy and are able to push more money down to our local school districts, great. But really, there's a big fear of the unknown right now.
Roseanne Wood of the Leon County School Board, like Hannah, is worried about what will happen to vulnerable students whose education gets extra support from federal money.
You know, our mission in public schools is to help every child. And these funds are critical.
Wood points to Title I funding for schools with 75% of students from low-income areas, and IDEA money for students with disabilities.
We have more need in that area than we've ever had before. And so not only do we need what the federal government gives us or has been giving us in the past, I hope the state will step up as well. And when we have the resources to help children with disabilities and help children that are low income, then everybody benefits.
Ray Rodriguez, chancellor of the state university system, is happy about the president's order.
Ultimately, I think this is going to be good for the American people. I think it's going to be good for our students. I think our states do a very good job, particularly in Florida, in terms of education, whether that's K through 12 or higher education.
He points out that U.S. News and World Report ranked Florida the number one state in the nation for education in 2024. The magazine said the state ranked first in higher ed and 10th in pre-K through 12.
So states like Florida, who have a track record of doing this job well, I think are particularly going to see the benefit.
Stewart Republican Senator Gail Harrell chairs the Senate Appropriations Committee on Higher Education and says she has no problem with eliminating federal DOE.
So by eliminating the bureaucracy of the Department of Education, now that would take federal legislation from Congress to do because it is a recognized department instituted by the U.S. Congress. So it can't be totally abolished. The funds can be moved out of it and the bureaucracy downsized considerably. And those services could be available through other departments.
Lori Lawson Cox chairs the Leon County School Board. She spent Thursday, the day Trump signed the executive order, at the Florida Capitol with legislators and other educators.
I do believe, and I heard them say, that they will hold harmless our food issues that we're worried about with our food nutrition program in our schools, our Title I funding, and also our students with disabilities, which are three areas that are important to me and I know are important to probably every American and every Floridian.
Trump tasked U.S. Education Secretary Linda McMahon with taking all necessary steps to close DOE and return its functions to the states. A report from NPR says Trump has announced the Small Business Association will oversee student loans. He has indicated the funds for students with disabilities will shift under Health and Human Services. I'm Margie Menzel.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Danny Rivero and Joaquin Brutus. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week online and on air for more reports from the state capitol.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.